Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Mike Levin speaking for Kaleidoscope. The 1964 Washington and Lee Mock Republican Convention was held only last week, and yet the effects of that convention are resounding in national polls and magazines throughout this country. It was, to say the least, quite an event. Through the facilities of WREL and Radio Washington and Lee, we on Kaleidoscope have tried to recapture some of the highlights of the convention. This convention was a blend of humor and enthusiasm, and this blend was not only generated by the students of Washington and Lee. Here is convention chairman Phil Sharp reading an opening message to the convention from a very distinguished American.
I feel it is very appropriate at this time to read a message from a most distinguished American addressed to the delegates of the 1964 Mock Republican National Convention. I quote, "It has come to my attention that Washington and Lee University is again holding its mock political convention. I would not want this occasion to pass by without expressing my hearty approval to all concerned. I think it is singularly appropriate that a school of higher learning should be the scene of an effort to stimulate interest among young people in the workings of America's political system. This, from many aspects, is as vital to a well-rounded education as the standard subjects that make up the curriculum. The future of the United States, its sustained moral fiber and continuing devotion to the concept of truly representative government, rests in the hands of the emerging generation. Equipping its members with firsthand knowledge of the methods by which our two-party system selects its leaders will go a long way towards recruiting new talent to meeting the problems confronting the nation. I know the convention will be the success it deserves to be. Signed, Dwight David Eisenhower."
But former presidents were not the only interested onlookers at this convention who contributed to the general enthusiasm. There were other former reigning monarchs, like Jacqueline Mayer, Miss America of 1963. She, too, helped to generate that fantastic enthusiasm which lasted for 2 days. And maybe she generated more than that.
There's not much I can say at this time, except I'm... Just for that, I'm going to say something. In Virginia. I'd like to thank the Ohio delegation for the wonderful... time they've shown me. And I would just like to say that I came from Northwestern University the other day. And just last weekend, we had our mock political convention. And I feel that they should take a lesson from you all.
But there was also some serious business to be decided at this convention. Besides the selection of a presidential candidate, the many visiting Republican dignitaries wanted to make sure that the general enthusiasm of the convention lasted more than merely 2 days at Washington and Lee. The establishment of an authentic two-party system in the South depended upon this, as was evident in the Virginia State GOP Chairman Horace Henderson's address to the convention.
Delegates to this 1964 mock Republican convention, as the GOP chairman of one of the fastest growing Republican states in this nation, pleased to welcome you today to the Commonwealth of Virginia. Now, at one time it was said that if you saw a Virginian sitting next to a stump and something moved, you knew it was a stump. This is no longer true in Virginia. As the second fastest growing state east of the Mississippi, we are on our way today to becoming, for the first time in one century, a two-party political state.
Soon the convention got down to the business at hand, politics. The general theme of the Washington and Lee Convention, and what very well may be the theme of the San Francisco Convention, was sounded first by Congressman Richard H. Poff of Roanoke.
Mr. Chairman, I believe 8 times before, the Washington and Lee mock convention successfully predicted presidential nominees. This, I believe, is primarily because while other colleges in their mock conventions have emphasized the mock, Washington and Lee University has emphasized the convention. They have striven first to simulate the form and the pageantry of a political convention, and in so doing have become embroiled primarily in campus politics. Washington and Lee has sought to attain the level of authenticity, and if this project in which you are engaged is to be anything more than a mere popularity contest, if it is to have any significance in the great political world, and if it is to be useful as an educational device, then I think that substance is more vital than form, and that authenticity is more valuable than pageantry. But that is not to say that there should be no pageantry. Authenticity itself would suffer if there were no pageantry. But behind the bunting and the campaign placards, I realize, and lest someone forget, let me assert, there is a lofty purpose here involved, and one which I think was perhaps best defined by the late great president of this university on his first inauguration as such, Dr. Francis Gaines, when he said, and let me quote his words, it is the purpose of this university to strive to deposit in the life of a boy something a little finer than culture, a little rarer than competence, a little nobler than success. This convention is about to take the first step in the re-enthroning of the principle on which this government was based, namely that the best government is the government closest to the people. You are about to reassert your confidence in the ancient and accepted doctrine of delegated, reserved, and separated powers and the unique American system of checks and balances, which is a part of it. A system of checks and balances which operates first between the states on the one hand, vertically to the federal government, and second, on the other hand, horizontally among the three branches of the federal government. And finally, our new president will remind us that our forefathers did not inspire the authors of the Declaration of Independence and other documents which gave birth to our nation by promising them an American government which would create happiness, but only a government which would guarantee the right to pursue happiness. And
Mr. Poff's address was followed by his introduction of the keynoter of the convention, Dr. Walter Judd of Minnesota, who enlarged and elaborated on the general aims of the Republican Party.
You're listening to Congressman Poff from Roanoke speaking to the mock convention and about to introduce the keynote speaker, Walter Judd,
who is about to make your keynote address, has had some experience in this task. 4 years ago in the city of Chicago, before a nationwide television audience, this man made another keynote speech before another convention. And as the excellence of that performance illustrates, no man in America is more talented in the craftsmanship of statesmanship or adept in the artistry of rhetoric or better equipped to spark your deliberations in this convention than the Honorable Walter H. Judd.
Congressman Poff of Virginia has just introduced the keynote speaker for this afternoon, Walter H. Judd. The Minnesota delegation is escorting Mr. Judd to the speaker's platform. And Dr. Judd is about to deliver the keynote address. The entire convention has risen to its feet, and each delegation is giving Dr. Judd a tremendous warm welcome to Washington and Lee University. You're listening to the proceedings. The opening proceedings of the Washington and Lee Mock Convention 1964.
Chairman Poff and all you distinguished delegates to the 1964 Republican Convention. I'm the only front-running candidate for the presidential nomination this year who's to speak to you in person, and you've given such a wonderful response, I accept the nomination. Now, I'm going to wade right into the responsibilities you Republican delegates have in this crucial year. Government is the most powerful factor in your lives, and you know it. On which of the five continents are you going to be before you're 25 years of age. That depends on what your government does, and what your government does depends on what kind of government you have. It reaches into your life, it reaches into your plans, it reaches into your pocketbook, and it reaches into your prospects for the future. Therefore, your first question, and you come to a convention like this, is what kind of government do we want in these United States? That is, what kind of government do we believe will be best for our country and ourselves and our families and our future? Will it be that kind of government which makes most possible for people to do for themselves, or will it be the government that tries to win your votes and probably genuinely believe that it's good and benign if it does everything for you without your having the opportunity to exert yourself to the utmost? This is the first kind of question. What kind of government do we really believe is best? From the top down, or one that gives us opportunity to run, as Dick Poff so well said, our own lives, with government regulating and giving order and opportunity and incentive, but not managing people's lives. Now the second question is, how do you get the kind of government you want? Well, you get government by the government you want by thinking about the principles. What principles are sound? And what policies in foreign and domestic relations best will carry, put into effect those principles? And then the concrete specific programs for all sections of our population, rich and poor, city and country, black and white, native-born immigrant, all our people, what kind of programs will be best? And then those three are not enough. You have to go on and get persons, select persons who in their own background exemplify those basic principles and who believe in them and who will stick to them. And if you get them elected, we'll put them into practice. And then you have one more job to do. Principles, policies, programs, persons, and presentation. Again and again and again, the Republican Party comes up with the best principles and the best policies and the best programs, and by all odds, the most capable and attractive candidates. And we fail to win elections because we don't do as convincing, winsome, winning, contagious, persuasive presentation. The Democrats do a better job of selling a much inferior product, I almost said a lousy product, than we do of selling a very good product. Now, a political party exists for one major purpose. This is particularly important. All elections are crucial, but I tell you soberly, I think this election is one of the most crucial in our history for two main reasons. The present administration in Washington for a little more than 3 years has been moving in two directions, which, unless they are checked and reversed, are bound, in my judgment, to lead to disaster. One's in our foreign relations and one is in our domestic relations. In our foreign relations, this administration has embarked upon a deliberate policy of basing our hopes for peace on our ability to get along with our enemies, even though that disintegrates our alliances with our friends. A shift from trust in free people and people who believe in freedom and are who are our loyal allies and friends to a trust in our mortal enemies dedicated to our own destruction. I've talked longer about foreign policy than I will about domestic policy, because you've had others talk about this, and this is the one place where I was most concerned. If we're free and secure, we can solve all these other problems, and if we aren't free and secure, and we have to spend more and more of our money for arms, we can't get any solutions here at home. under Republicans or Democrats that will last very long. We've got to keep America free, that's first. Now let me turn just briefly to this question of the trend at home, where we're turning from faith in our own system right at the time when the world sees that ours works and communism doesn't work, to trust in the system of more and more powers to the federal government under the notion that once they get to Washington, they become supermen and they have more judgment and greater wisdom and better goodness for managing our lives than they had when our neighbors were here at home. The Democrats seek to solve our economic problems, always one remedy, expanding the power of the federal government. We Republicans believe that progress comes primarily from the ideas and efforts of individuals. Hence, we want greater opportunities and incentive for individuals and for voluntary organizations, and less concentration of power in government. In the first 2 years of this administration, Democratic administration, the president asked the Congress to grant 72 new additional powers to the executive branch, which had never before been in the hands of our executive branch. Now, their argument is that our society is now complex and complicated. And the more complex it is, the more it must be regulated and controlled by an increasingly powerful central government. They say this, but nobody proves it. I challenge it. It's just an assertion. In fact, the very opposite can be proved, namely, that the more complicated and complex a society becomes, the more impossible it is for anybody at the top, no matter how brilliant or idealistic or patriotic they may be, even to grasp all the details, let alone manage them as a unit. Dick,
the evening session of the convention saw the nomination of 6 front-running candidates. Here is a recreation of 5 of those nominations.
The state of California has indicated their desire to make a nomination. They have designated a distinguished Republican and courageous American to make that nomination. I give you the distinguished Sandy Walton of the state of California.
This party needs a man who would not tolerate and could not live a lie and could not tolerate a clandestine romance with the woman he loved just to further his political career, but who instead put all his cards on the table and married this lovely woman whose name describes the private life he has since led. This party wants the kind of man who pushed through legislation which in one fell swoop swept away corrupt liquor practices that were dating back 2 decades. This party wants that candidate who has shown here in Lexington more than anyone else the best organization and the best publicity in his campaign, and further has shown the most interest in what we are doing in this little town in Western Virginia today and tomorrow. Since this party is a realistic party, it knows that no campaign against that buffoon in Washington can be successful without money. And this party wants a man who is willing to spend the money needed to put the elephant back into power and kick out the ass.
Throw holes in water.
Republican Party, and who has not been afraid to mingle with the people as some other candidates who spout extremist remarks every time they open their mouth. man the Republican Party wants for the next president of the United States is that man the great and sovereign state of California nominates for the next president, Governor Nelson A. Rockefeller.
Now, ladies and gentlemen and fellow delegates, the state of Connecticut has yielded to the state of New Hampshire to make a nomination. New Hampshire has chosen an illustrious Republican to make that nomination. I present to you the distinguished Jay Clark of the state of New Hampshire.
Mr. Chairman, fellow delegates, and those of us who are left, we are assembled here tonight to make a very important and a difficult selection. One that will affect us all during the course of our lifetime.
The American people need this man as their leader. The Republican Party needs this man as their leader. And the world needs this man as their leader. Let's give the American people whom they want. Let's give the American people what they deserve, the very best of leadership. We must not pass by this great man. We must nominate him here at this convention so that the American people can send him to the White House in November. With these brief remarks in mind, and with deep faith in this convention that we will nominate the best man to lead our party, to lead our nation, and to lead our world, it gives me great pleasure to place in nomination the name of Ambassador Henry Cabot Lodge!
And now, ladies and gentlemen of the convention, the delegates from the state of Maine have indicated their desire to make a nomination for President of the United States. Their outstanding chairman is on the platform for the purpose of making that nomination. I give you the distinguished George Craddock of the state of Maine.
Mr. Durant.
It is with a great deal of pride and pleasure that the state of Maine once more reminds you that as Maine goes, so goes the nation. And the Pine Tree State places in nomination their beloved senior senator, their favorite daughter, that outstanding American, Senator Margaret Chase Smith.
Convention, we will continue with the nominating of candidates for President of these United States. An outstanding Republican from the state of North Dakota is on the platform for the purpose of making a nomination. I present to you the distinguished William Knoll of the state of North Dakota.
Thank you.
I look to a man who will provide both national and political leadership, so that a united, effective, and responsible Republican Party can translate into constructive action those aims and principles embodied in our platform.
Yes.
Ladies and gentlemen of the convention, it is my pleasure at this time to place in nomination the name of a man who is a pilgrim for peace, who has not forgotten either the cost or the value of freedom. Ladies and gentlemen, that man is the Honorable Richard M. Nixon.
At this time, the delegation from the state of Pennsylvania wishes to make a nomination for president. An outstanding Republican. An outstanding Republican from that state is standing by to make that nomination. I present to you the distinguished Thomas Budd from the state of Pennsylvania.
Well, there.
It is my purpose to offer to this convention a man behind whom we can and will unite, a man behind whom we will not fail because we cannot fail, because this man does not know, nor will he accept failure. The Republican Party needs a strong single leader. Today, I offer them that leader.
Berlin.
I offer deliver to this convention a man whose names will be on the lips of all Americans, from California to Pennsylvania, from the great state of Alaska to the great state of Texas. A man whose life is devoted to freedom. A man, the only man, who all Republicans and all Americans can follow to the polls election time. You cry out for union, and I offer you union. I offer in nomination the next president of these great United States, William Warren Scranton.
You're just in listening.
The demonstrations for all these candidates were incredible, but none of them came close to the demonstration which followed the nomination of Senator Barry Goldwater by Mike Hayslip.
Where are the men like Teddy Roosevelt, who couldn't be bribed, cajoled, and manipulated in the face of greed by foreign powers? We need such a man. We have such a man. In the area of domestic policy, we need a president with a genuine desire to eradicate governmental waste and inefficiency, not a man who tries to dupe the public by turning off the lights in the White House. Working in the dark shouldn't bother this president. He's done plenty of it before. We need a president who believes that individuals and states should handle medical care problems, not a man who believes in combining these problems into one hulking mass of bureaucratic inefficiency. President with a program to correct the basic causes of poverty in our great nation, not a man who believes he can spend his way out of the poorhouse. We need this kind of president. We have the man who will be this kind of president. It is therefore my great pleasure to place the nomination before this convention, a man with a wisdom and foresight of Thomas Jefferson, the faith and understanding of Abraham Lincoln, the indomitable courage of Theodore Roosevelt, the unfaltering devotion of Dwight D. Eisenhower, the distinguished senator from Arizona, Barry M. Goldwater.
Mike Hayslip has just completed giving the nomination speech for Barry Goldwater. Pandemonium has broken loose here on the convention floor. Delegations are streaming around the floor parading for Goldwater. Balloons are being released from the ceiling above the mock convention.
After the nominations of the six front-running candidates and the usual number of favorite sons, the balloting got underway. The first ballot was a prelude to the final selection, which the delegates would make on the next ballot. Here is the beginning of the first ballot as Andy Anderson calls for the first votes.
The name of each state will be called, and as it is called, the chairman of the delegation will arise and announce his vote. The chief reading clerk, Mr. Andy Anderson, will call the roll, and if you will be attentive and quiet and respond quickly, the roll call can be completed quickly. Are the tally clerks prepared?
The tally clerk's ready. Clerk's ready. Let's put him up there. Yes, tell me.
For the information of all the delegates attending the convention, there are 1,308 delegates in attendance, and 655 votes are needed to obtain the nomination. The roll call of states will now begin. Mr. Anderson.
Okay, let's go on.
Why don't you change your...
No.
Alabama!
Here is the highlight of the first ballot as the California chairman announces his state's decision and is rebuffed by one of the members of his delegation.
California!
Mr. Chairman, the great sovereign state of California, home of the golden sands and golden plum, is proud to cast its colossal delegation, 86 votes, for the Wilson Alderman!
After a poll of the California delegation, the voting of that delegation was upheld, and all of the 86 votes went to Rockefeller. The final count at the end of the first ballot gave Senator Goldwater 601 votes, 54 short of victory. But it was a different story on Tuesday afternoon as the convention engaged in the second balloting. We pick up the second ballot as the Stop Goldwater movement is in full swing.
As the chairman of the Minnesota delegation,
Puerto Rican float was a paddle whale steamer. Here's Mike Levin to give you the rundown on the states where Senator Goldwater has picked up or perhaps lost votes.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, here are the states in which Senator Goldwater picked up his support, which gives him a plus total of 26 more votes than he had at this stage in the balloting this morning. And these are the states. In Arkansas, the senator picked up 5 votes. In Colorado, the senator picked up 12 votes. In Hawaii, he picked up 4 votes. In Illinois, he picked up 3 votes. In Kansas, he picked up 4 votes. In Maine, he picked up 2 votes. In Massachusetts, he picked up an unexpected 2 votes. And in Michigan, he picked up 4 votes. And now,
the Goldwater forces began to hit a snag as the balloting came down to Missouri.
Well, you heard the vote. This morning, Missouri gave 12 of its 24 votes to Senator Goldwater,
Missouri,
taking 6 away this afternoon.
Votes for Nixon.
Nixon picked up 3 over this morning. He had 6 this morning and 9 this afternoon. Lodge picked up 4. He had none this morning. Rockefeller remained the same with 2 votes. Scranton received 3 votes, down 1 from this morning's ballot, where he had 4. Montana will be paged next. Jim Slay. Jim Slay, state chairman.
The low point of Senator Goldwater's chances came when the New York delegation cast its ballots.
To New York, Governor Nelson Rockefeller.
What made the last month convention so great was recognizing months in advance the rising star of John Kennedy, and hoping that this convention will recognize months in advance the descending star of Barry Goldwater.
Senators, Chairman Sandy Walton of the New York delegation.
20 votes. Well, we're giving everybody on that board but Barry Goldwater. 20 votes are given to Henry Cabot Lodge. 20
splitting
are
its
given to Governor Scranton. 2 votes are given to Margaret Chase Smith. 2 votes are given to Mr. Governor Romney. 2 votes are given to Mr. Burns. 2 votes are given to anyone else who will vote for Governor Nelson Rockefeller.
But after New York, it was all Goldwater, as was quite evident when the voting reached the delegation from Texas.
The roll call will continue with Texas, 56 votes. Here's Clerk Anderson.
Texas!
finally, with Wisconsin, Senator Barry M. Goldwater was nominated by Washington and Lee's 1964 mock Republican convention for the high office of President of the United States.
Wisconsin, 30 votes.
Wisconsin.
Tied up in a favorite son last time. This vote could put Senator Goldwater over the top.
And so, for all intents and purposes, the 1964 Washington and Lee mock Republican convention came to a close. The delegates selected William Scranton as their vice presidential candidate, and then it was time to go home. For 2 days, the students at Washington and Lee and the population of the surrounding area had witnessed an event which was something to remember. For Kaleidoscope, this is Mike Levin. Good night.